Good afternoon again. This time of the year, I think that those of us who are readers of Scripture, who have history in the Church of God, we all become quite acutely aware of leaven. There are a lot of conversations about leaven. It's likely that in your lead-up over the next few weeks, if you haven't already started, you're like, oh, nope, not going down the bread aisle, right? I'm not going to put that into my freezer. Or maybe you recall that I bought, maybe it's sitting in your freezer. So you just, it's just on our minds, and we talk about it. There are a lot of messages about leaven. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6. As the temperature has been warming up, I've been thinking as I look out at my car, I need to clean that. I need to go find the big lump of cake that's underneath my chair that Mr. Kiesel was talking about the other week. But it comes to mind. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6. Read verses 6 through 8. It says, Paul writes here to the Corinthians, it says, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now it's likely that you have turned to this scripture multiple times over the course of the years, and if you haven't, and it's fresh and it's new, great. But we can read this, and you can look. And today, what I'd like to talk about is really the question that maybe for a first time, or maybe if we're, again, reviewing this, what exactly is leaven? We talk about it a lot. We talk about spiritual connections, and we discuss leaven quite a bit, but what is leaven? And why should I care? Why should you care what leaven is? Because we're told in this passage, get rid of it. It leavens an entire lump. You know, don't have that old leaven of malice and wickedness, but have the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So what is leaven? And so today we're going to look at that. We're going to talk about what is leaven and why should we care about that. So in the first part, what is leaven? It's very easy. It's when air bubbles get trapped in dough. That's what leaven is. Air bubbles getting trapped in dough. That's all leaven is. It's just air bubbles trapped in dough. Now, depending on the kind of bread that you're making, the kind of dough that you're using, you might want to have a more consistent air bubble. And this is where something like a baking powder might come in, or a baking soda. Let me backtrack here. There are three types of leaven that we're probably commonly aware of today. You will have the first kind, we would say, is mechanical leavening. Because, again, leavening is getting air inside of the dough. So you have mechanical leavening. You might think of somebody who so much time to whisk the egg whites, to beat them until they have the wave and they're holding their form, right? So you can do that, or you can do a puff pastry or a choux pastry where they do layers. Actually, that's a puff pastry. They'll do layers and layers, and they have butter between each layer. They fold it over, they book it, they press it down, and they fold it some more. It's like, how many times can you fold this really thin piece of pastry? But then what happens is, between each layer, the moisture of the dough that you have, when you put it into the oven, what happens is the water starts to turn to steam, and you essentially will mechanically get then air in between. Now, you haven't put a leavening agent into it, but you have mechanically introduced air bubbles into the dough, right? A choux pastry is different. It's more of a French thing. They'll actually cook it on the stove first, and then they'll to kind of get a thick sort of a pasty thing. Then they'll set it out, and then they'll bake it. That's a different one, but that's just a mechanical aspect of leavening. And so they will get the carbon dioxide, get the air into the batter. The second kind of leavening that would be chemical leavening. And this would be something where you have the baking powder, the baking soda. This actually didn't come around until late 1700s. They would have around, one of the first American cookbooks came out, 1796. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it came out in the late 1700s. And it had what was called, potash, which was essentially lye and some other stuff that you would mix together. But it was an acid. And so then they went to baking soda, and in 1846 was baking soda, and by 1856 you had baking powder because you could control it a little bit more. But the concept of chemical leavening is you will use a chemical reaction of an acid with a base. When you introduce moisture to it, to water, you're going to get a reaction. You think of vinegar and baking soda, and you're making one of those volcanoes in grade school for science class, right? Is that sort of a process. And so chemically, what you do then, in order to utilize that for leavening, chemically leavening your bread, is you want to capture that in the dough. And so what they will do is they will have the acid, the base. So if you're doing the acid, think of something like sour milk, buttermilk, right? They would start off using sour milk, but you couldn't really control it because you didn't know, well, how bad was the milk? How sour was it? So when you're adding the base to it, you didn't know exactly how much. One time, I think the first batch of cookies I ever made, I was making them for school, and I used baking soda instead of baking powder. You know what happens when you do that? It can taste metallic because I didn't have enough. And this is the thing about a chemical reaction. So you capture it. You want to capture it in the batter. But with a chemical reaction, you have to either have the exact correct balance of the acid to the base so that you get a full reaction, a full chemical reaction. Everything is used up, and what you're left with is the carbon dioxide and the water, right, which the water steams off, and then you're good. If you have anything extra of one or the other, you're going to get a flavor difference. And this is where I had too much of the baking soda, and so it had a metallic flavor to it. Now, you can actually utilize a neutralizing agent, which will take up the rest of something. There are a whole food science things you can get into about what neutralizing agents work and all this other fun stuff. We're not going to go there. But the whole process of a chemical leavening agent is you capture that whole concept of the volcano, of the baking soda, and the vinegar thing inside of your bread or your dough. And so when you do that, you have the moisture, you have the acid, you have the base, you have the moisture, and then the heat goes ahead and arrests it inside of whatever it is that you're baking. So, again, I mentioned cakes with a baking powder or baking soda because they produce, when you do a chemical leavening, it will produce more uniform bubbles throughout. The third kind is biological leavening. Now, for most of man's existence in the world, biological leavening was the only way that they went. And so I think I did a message last year where I was talking about sourdough and all these other things. And this whole concept of sourdough is the same thing as what is biological leavening. And this is when you're getting carbon dioxide into the batter through the process of fermentation. So you're still trying to get air, carbon dioxide, bubbles inside of it, but this is happening through fermentation. This is dating back to around 1000 BC. Some people argue whether it was in Egypt or whether it was in Mesopotamia. Who's the first one that had it? They had to have domed ovens in order to be able to do this. There are a number of other things that they had to do. They hypothesized whether or not it was somebody who was making beer. They think that maybe it was somebody who made beer that then accidentally used it in their bread. However it worked out, sometime around then. But it's been around for a long time. A long time. And so what happens there, this is actually a far more, I'll say, in-depth process when you get into the fermentation and what happens with a yeast. So we will go, and I mean, it's, I think, what, last year or 2 years ago, you couldn't even find yeast if you wanted it because everybody was using it to do sourdough. But the whole concept of a baker's yeast and just being able to get it from a packet, that actually didn't come out until, I think it was 1940s. They dried it because you used to get, and you can get a baker's yeast If you get baker's yeast, it's different than the yeast that you'll get in the dried yeast that you'll get in a packet. Because the dried yeast you get in a packet is quite potent. But a baker's yeast actually comes in a brick, and they don't have to. It doesn't have to proof like what the stuff that you or I might normally get over at the store. But anyway, what happens with yeast in the biological leavening process is that fermentation. And so what you have in grains, and all the grains are going to have this to some degree or the other, they have an enzyme in there that is called amylase. And they have two kinds of amylase. They've got alpha amylase and beta amylase. And these will actually come out when you a little bit more, there's alpha amylase is there more present just in the grain and the hull itself. The other portion of the amylase comes out a little bit more through the grinding process. As you mill it, it'll make it available there. But what happens is you add water to it, not even adding a yeast yet, but when you add water to that, it starts to break down the complex starch chain or the complex carbohydrates that is there in the grain. Then, so the alpha amylase starts to break down that complex starch, and then the beta amylase comes in, and on the back end of that complex starch that gets broken down is something that's called maltose. And that maltose then, the enzyme goes and reacts with that and makes maltase. Sorry, let me rephrase. The enzyme comes, takes off the maltose off the end. You need the maltose because then when you add the yeast to it, the yeast has the maltase. The yeast then comes in and it interacts with the maltase. So all of the stuff that's happening with the amylase and what is there in the grain, it gets broken down with the water, but then you add the yeast to it, or you add what's going to produce the fermentation, you add the fungi that is the yeast, it goes and starts breaking it down, and it takes the maltase and it breaks it down into a simple sugar, glucose. And that is what is then able to feed the yeast. And then what the yeast does is it eats all these simple sugars that it has broken down, and then it burps, and you get carbon dioxide in your bread, in the dough. So the yeast then feeds off of the glucose and it creates the CO2. This process is then arrested when you put it into the oven because it kills the yeast. Now the thing about the yeast, unlike the mechanical leavening and unlike the chemical leavening, the yeast knows no bounds. The mechanical leavening is as much as you can whisk in there, as many times as you're willing to roll out that puff pastry. That's how much you're going to get into it. The time that you put into it, that's what you're going to get. The chemical leavening, it's balancing the acid and the base, and you can mess that up. You know, like the cookies that I made, I mean, they look beautiful. They were sugar cookies. I remember poking the fork in and making the whole crosshatch on the top of it. They tasted horrendous because the balance was not right, right? But biological leavening, I remember when I was growing up, my mom would do, I mean, there are few things better than fresh bread out of the oven. I mean, you can just smell it. This is why grocery stores will pipe that through the entirety of their store. Like if they got a bakery in there, they pipe the bakery smell through their systems purposefully. So actually, when I was growing up, we would go past Nichols Bakery on the way to church services, and you'd have to go and smell the bread for 2 miles before and 3 miles after because that's the way the wind blew. But it's like that smell is just wonderful, the aroma. But there were times that my mom would go to proof the dough, and then we'd go out to go do other things. And proofing dough is a science. If you let it go longer, there's a distinct aroma to the dough because it goes long. And if you let it go too long, I mean, she had these big mixing bowls. There were seven of us in the family. Maybe they weren't this big, but they seemed this big when I was a kid. They were huge mixing bowls. And I remember a time seeing what started off as a lump of dough, unproofed in there that big. You would take it, and the mixing bowl was like that tall, and it would get all the way up over, and it would go all the way over the sides if you missed stopping the proof. Because the thing with bread and the fermentation process is you have to arrest the leavening process, or else it's going to ruin, leaven the entire lump, right? If you leave a pancake mix with baking powder, you know what's going to happen? It might go flat. You might have to just add more leavening agent to it. But you can resurrect that just fine. You just add more proportional acid and base. There you go, right? It's leaven. You can now make it again. And with some of the things, that's more a case with baking soda. Baking powder is a little bit easier, more shelf-stable. It'll last a little bit longer. But with bread, if you let it go, with biological fermentation, with yeast, if you let it go, and you don't watch it, you do not want to eat that. You can think, oh, we can save it. I've tried to have bread that was saved. It was not. It was rock hard. Did not rise anymore in the oven because it's like a double proofing process when you do bread. You do the initial proof outside of the oven, and then you punch it down. You knead it some more, get the gluten binding and all this other stuff, and then you'll put a small thing inside of your pan into the oven. And I see people nodding, so we got bakers in the audience here, right? Then you put it into the oven, and then it'll grow out to its size because it does a second proof while you're baking. But then the heat of the baking in the oven kills the yeast, stops the fermentation process, therefore stops the production of carbon dioxide, therefore stops the leavening process. And so this is kind of how things work. Actually, in the proper conditions, you give it the right conditions, the moisture, the humidity, everything, over the course of 2 days, you can turn 100 yeast particles, yeast cells, into 400 billion in 2 days. And if you've ever seen a piece of bread rise, a little ball of dough, you're like, man, is it ever going to get to the size it should be? It will. It will get huge. It will get big. Louis Pasteur is actually credited as saying, regarding the amount of fermentation that the yeast microorganisms can perform, he described it to an audience. He said, a yeast work rate on glucose is the equivalent of a 200-pound person chopping 2 million pounds of wood in 2 days. That's the amount of work they do. When they're breaking down, you know, the complex starch, the carbohydrates, to be able to get to the glucose, all of that work that they're doing, it's like a 200-pound person chopping 2 million pounds of wood in 2 days. So that is leavening. I bet you didn't think you were going to learn all of that about leavening. Some of you probably already knew that. So then the question is, why do you care? Why do we care about leavening? We focus on leavening so much, getting it out of our cars, vacuuming it everywhere, and we should, because God tells us. Let's go back, if you haven't turned away from, we're in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6 still. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6, it says, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? So this is an intriguing thing, because as we're talking about it, we talked about three different types of leavening. You have mechanical, you have chemical, and you have biological. It's important for us to know that when we're talking in the context of Scripture, there was only one type of leavening when this is written. Now, I am not saying that the other two are not leavening, because if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it is a duck. Should we go around saying, well, but it's not actually leavening? Well, if it looks like sin, feels like sin, seems like sin, Jesus Christ had a whole lot to say about that in Matthew 5. You've heard it said, oh, I didn't murder. Well, but how close are you willing to get to the line? So that aside, I want to make sure that when we're talking about the analogy of leavening, when we're thinking about leavening from what Scripture says, keep in context of mind the ability of something so small to so rapidly and so wholly obliterate whatever it is in. And this is what the fermentation process. And we have people who brew. You can ruin wine and you can ruin beer by letting them go too long with the fermentation process. Fermentation, once it is started, it will go on until it consumes and destroys every vestige of what you were wanting there in it. It will eat all the glucose. It will eat all of those simple sugars, and it will keep working until there's none. It's almost like a parasite. Almost. But anyway, we're back here over in 1 Corinthians 5. It says, your glorying is not good. In verse 6, do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Strong's defines process of leaven here. It is actually the Greek word for leaven is zume. It means to ferment. This is what they're talking about. They're talking about a fermentation process. It's likely from the Greek word that means to boil, because you think about how something comes up. If you've ever seen bread that has proofed, dough that has proofed too long, it looks pockmarked like a pot of something that had been boiling. And so just the process of it coming up, this is what they believe that the root word of zume, to ferment or leaven, and throughout here it's used quite a bit in these three verses. It is defined as, biblically speaking, a metaphor of inveterate mental and moral corruption, speaking of leaven, viewed in its tendency to infect others. Another definition is leaven is applied to that substance which is small in quantity, yet thoroughly pervades a thing by its influence. So when we're talking about leaven, we're talking about something that has the potential to affect, quite literally, its entire environment. It's a pretty pervasive thing. When you think about things that will affect their entire environment, I mean, temperature goes down, everybody puts a jacket on, right? Things that affect the entire environment. Now you think about that and extrapolate that out to your life, my life, what it is that we're going through as we're going through this process of de-leavening in preparation for the spring holy days, the Passover, the days of unleavened bread. What is it that is in our life, as Hebrews said, that so easily ensnares us, pulls us in, affects the entirety of everything around it? Let's go to Matthew 13, verse 33. Because this is another section of Scripture we will see this concept of leaven. A lot of times we'll look at leaven and be like, oh, that's the worst. Leaven is sin. I'm not arguing that. It is used as an analogy for sin. But I would submit that leaven is not sin. It is merely the example that is used because people could see it happening. They could watch the bread rise. They could watch it. They would know that if I didn't get back home in time, if I stayed in the field a little bit too long, when I came back, it's done. All that work that I did beforehand, I mean, well, maybe they wouldn't throw it out. Maybe they would have an experience like I did, and you would have a really dense sourdough bread that was just not the right kind of sourdough. Just, I mean, it caves down in the middle. It doesn't rise up. It is, oh, it's not light and fluffy. You can put all the butter and jam and honey and whatever you want. It's just, it's a chore to eat. It's hard. It's difficult. Anyway, Matthew 13:33, we see here the example that Jesus Christ speak of. There's a, if you want a parallel scripture for this, Luke 13:20-21 talks about the same thing. But Matthew 13, verse 33 says, another parable Jesus spoke to them. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven. And sometimes people are going to have a difficult time when you turn to this scripture and we're talking about leaven, and leaven is sin. No. Leaven is, we're talking about the pervasiveness of something. That's what the analogy is. It's like leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till it was all leaven. We're talking about the kingdom of heaven. What does God say? It's going to expand. It's going to be huge. It's going to go out until it covers the entire earth. And all that's going to be left, we know from the eighth day, the end of God's holy day plan, everything, the last enemy that's going to be gotten rid of is death. But all that's left, is what has consumed everything, which is God's kingdom, which like leaven, it's going to expand out. And you're like, oh, that's a great thing, and it's good. It is, unless the leaven is something bad, right? And so it's not bad to have something that consumes our entire life, but generally, as people, we just don't do that. The things that consume us are the things that are pulling us away from God. They're allowing us to have a little god, an idol, something that we'll set up and is more important, that we would rather have as the forefront of our mind than the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Because I don't care if it's an egg and onion or everything. It's those matzos are just not as good as fresh bread with butter on them, right? I just want the fresh bread. Why would I want a piece of cardboard? Nobody wants that, right? We joke about how you can hold them over from the previous year or previous 2 years, right? And there's nothing's different about it. It's the same. But you know what else? God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You always know what you're going to get. That was the thing when they're moving over and from unleavened bread to leavening your bread, you had to know how much acid was there in order to be able to use the milk and use the baking soda. You have to know when to stop that fermentation process. You have to know these things, or else you're not going to get a consistent outcome. But guess what you get when you just do flour, oil, water, and a little bit of salt? Same thing every time. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And there's a consistency that is there. Matthew chapter 16, just a few pages over, you can see a companion of this in Mark 8, verses 13 through 15. But we're going to read it in Matthew 16. Verse 5 through 12 is what we'll read. Matthew 16, verses 5 through 12. And when his disciples had come to the other side, speaking of Jesus and his disciples, they had forgotten to take bread. And Jesus said to them, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It's because we have taken no bread." But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees?" Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. See, there are things that we can latch on to, and we can hold on to. You know what we call them today? Pet doctrines. We can hold on to a concept so tightly, and it will just consume us. And we cannot look at our relationship with God or a relationship with a church organization except through the lens of that. And it will just pervade everything. In other places, Jesus Christ talks about it. Let's turn there. Luke 12. Luke 12, verse 1 through 3. Luke chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. We'll read here. Jesus Christ gets a little bit more specific because he's talking about how they're behaving, what they're doing. What is it that they are really, truly putting into the minds of people? Because they taught truth. He said, do what they tell you to do, but don't do what they do, right? And when you see someone telling you to do something, but then not doing it themselves, what does that do to you? I get angry. I'm like, what? I get indignant. Who are you to tell me? I can see clearly that you're not doing it. Why should I listen to you? Right? You got no leg to stand on. That, you might respond differently. You might be all internal with that. But that's how I respond. And you know what I have to do then? I got to do an attitude check. And so the Pharisees here are telling people to do things that they are not themselves doing. I mean, how do we feel when we look and we see our leaders saying, do this, and then we're like, oh, but you were over here just doing that. All of a sudden, what happens? The law no longer matters because I get to define it, right? Isn't that what we've seen happen over the last couple years? When you see someone who is a leader, a lawmaker, a person who is supposed to be telling you how to live, and they do not do it, well, certainly, if they're not doing it, why do I have to follow the rules? And we've seen a bunch of people say, well, they cast off restraint. I'm going to do what I want to do. I now become my own God. I become the person who sets the law instead of it being God. Getting a little awkward there when you start realizing this is what we have to fight. And so when you look at what Jesus Christ is talking about with the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, what does that do to people? It pervades, it gets in there, and it will destroy a person's commitment. It will destroy a person's willingness to obey. You guys are all in Luke chapter 12. Let's start in verse 1. It says, "In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude gathered together, so they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known." You know what you do when you proof dough? You cover it. You put You might seal it with a clear plastic wrap. We would do like a cheesecloth or a light cloth over top of it. That makes sure nothing falls onto it, but it can still breathe enough to proof and get bigger, right? But when he's talking about leaven, you can cover it. But you know what's still happening inside? It's still getting bigger. It's still growing. It's still invading the entire lump that you have it there. It says, there's nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear in inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. What the Pharisees and the Sadducees were doing, the leaven that they had, the hypocrisy, it wasn't just what they were doing, it's how it affected everyone around them. Their entire environment. So when we're talking about leaven, we're talking about purge out the old lump. We're being told to look for those things in our lives that are so pervasive that maybe we don't recognize they're there and they're pulling us away and they're setting ourselves up to be the one who's in charge, or they're making us question God's authority in something. All these things, whatever it might be, and it's probably different for each of us, but there is something in our life, I can pretty much guarantee it because, hi, I'm Nathan, I'm a human being, and I'm carnal, and I'm working on it, right? We all are. We all have something. We just have to be honest about it, because there's something in there that's leavening us, and it will kill us. It will make it so that it rises up over the top, and it looks beautiful. And it's great. But then you let it go a little bit too long, because it's not that much. It doesn't take that much to overproof bread, to overproof the dough. Unless it's stopped, it will destroy the entire environment. Again, we've talked about three different types of leaven, from the mechanical to the chemical to the biological. And there are times, again, that we might say, wow, pretty sure I don't have any biological leaven happening. I can stop the other ones, I can let them go, but again, I'd say, well, if it looks like sin, if it feels like sin, if it tastes like sin, guess what it is? It's leaven. It's sin. It's there. We need to take that out. Let's go to John 15. John chapter 15. Pick it up in verse 11. When it's talking about the process of biological leavening, the breakdown that has to happen there to the grain that is being used. What happens when you introduce the water to it, and a little bit more about how it starts to unbind the molecular structure of the carbohydrates and the sugars to get to be something that the yeast can then eat, right? It is changing that from what it was into something else, right? Because then the yeast eats the glucose and the simple sugars, the sucrose and the glucose eats that, and you're left with something that is no longer the grain. But the thing that Jesus Christ was for us and is for us and that we look forward to after the Passover, what was he 3 days later? He was the wave sheaf. He was a wave sheaf offering, which at that time of year, coming out of the winter, it would have been the barley harvest. He was a perfect wave sheaf barley harvest, grain. When we talk about the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth that we're ought to be putting into our life, to be taking that in and not having the leavening of malice and wickedness, what Jesus Christ was a bit of grain that had not been broken down, hadn't been reduced to its simplest form, but was still complex, was still true to form. The yeast hadn't come in and started decaying it, breaking it down to make it something that it had not originally been. We are called to be first fruits of a later harvest, right? Not the first of the first fruits, not the wave sheaf, but we're called to be the first fruits, which is symbolized there at Pentecost, that first harvest prior to the main harvest in the fall. But we're also called to be first fruits. We're called to make sure that, even though we might get broken down, But even when you add the water, it doesn't break down the grain. It doesn't take the maltose off the back end of it. The yeast does that. The yeast comes in and breaks it from just being the grain that it was before. John 15, verse 11. John 15, verses 11. Jesus speaking here on his final night. He says, "These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you. These things I command you, that you love one another." Did you catch something that he said there in verse 16? He wants us to make sure that our fruit remains. If we are leavened, the fruit is not there anymore. The fruit has been broken down to its simplest form and has been consumed by the yeast. Our job as Christians is to make sure that we take the leaven out so that we are not consumed by it, so that we don't allow it to envelop us, decay us, and consume us until there is nothing left. Our job is to stay strong, to make sure that we are bearing fruit and that we are keeping that fruit. Again, Jesus said, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain." We need to know what leaven is. We need to care what leaven is, because its spiritual counterpart will not stop until we are fully consumed and our entire environment is destroyed. So let's make sure that we are taking the leaven out of our lives.